This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. For nearly 30 years, author Anne B. Ross has written about the mysteries and mishaps that befall Miss Julia and her family and friends in the fictional town of Abbotsville. In the newest novel, Miss Julia Weathers the Storm, our heroine heads to the coast, where a hurricane brings both chaos and unexpected treasures. The New York Times best-selling Miss Julia series has captured the hearts of many readers, and Anne's hometown of Hendersonville, North Carolina, continues to provide her with endless inspiration for the fictional town of Abbotsville. Anne B. Ross joins us now from Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville. Hello, Anne.
Hello, Frank.
Would you tell us—
May I correct you?
You only certainly
20 years of writing. Not 30.
All right. Well, it's an amazingly successful career and a series that has brought endless joy to a great number of readers over that time. Tell us more about Miss Julia. Who is she?
Well, Frank, if you're from the South, she's probably someone you know. At least that's what people tell me. They write to me or talk to me in bookstores and libraries and so on, and they'll say, "How did you meet my mother?" Or, "Do you know the lady that lives next door?" So somewhere or another, I've just kind of found a type of woman. And not just from the South. I get correspondence from people on the Western Coast and Canada and Mexico and Italy and around. So she's a particular kind of woman. And but this woman, she has no children. She's been married for 40-something years. She's wealthy, but she doesn't know how wealthy until she finds her husband slumped over the steering wheel of his new Buick Park Avenue in the driveway. So the first book opens, which was published first in 1999. It opens as she is realizing just how well off she is, what he has left, and she has no children. And there's a knock on the door, the front door. She goes, and there's this woman with hair too yellow and too big and skirt too short and heels too high with a 9-year-old boy, and this is her husband's mistress and illegitimate son. And that's the way the series starts off. I look at them as comings-of-age stories, because Miss Julia learns what it's like to think for herself, say what she wants to, and live her life the way she wants to.
And collect the friends and family that she has along the way. Oh. Let's start with Sam, or her second husband.
Yes, dear Sam. I got so much email about him. A lady in Canada wrote and said, "Does Sam have a Canadian brother? And if so, where could I meet him?"
Well, tell us about him. Tell us more about him. And could he possibly have a Canadian brother, or is he a pure product of the South?
No, he's a product of the South. Sam has wanderlust. He likes to go on trips. He's been to Russia, and he's toured cathedrals in Europe. But Julia's a homebody. She doesn't like to go anywhere. And, of course, this is my little secret, because a lot of times I need Julia to do some things that Sam would not approve of, so I get him out of the story by sending him on a tour.
Because Julia, let me interrupt here. Forgive me for interrupting, but Julia's a snoop, right? I mean, she may be a proper lady, but man, she's in everybody's business.
No, Frank, I work hard to keep her from being a meddling Miss Marple, so I hate to say that, but she is interested, and usually these situations she gets into or have something to do with somebody that she cares about, and she feels that she is doing what she should do.
Well, let's give us a little sense of what's going on in this latest episode, Miss Julia Weathers the Storm. What's happening here?
Okay. This is from page one, and it starts, "Good morning, ladies." Sam, beaming with his usual early morning smile, came into the kitchen, greeting Lillian and me. My second husband, so different from the first one, was a man of warm good humor from the time he got out of bed until he got back in it. That had been somewhat of a surprise to me, having been accustomed to steering carefully around a bristly, short-tempered husband every morning for 40-something years, having watched my step and my words for that long, had turned me into a woman of cool temperament with few smiles, and stiff ones at that, before coffee was poured. "Morning, Mr. Sam," Lillian said as she stood beside the stove. "Egg's about ready." "Good morning," I responded, but without the bouncing eagerness with which he started the day. "Julia," Sam said as he sat at the kitchen table, "I have had an epiphany."
"A what?"
"An epiphany. You know, a sudden flash of enlightenment." He accepted the cup of coffee I just poured, then said, "Well, maybe it's more of a bright idea. What do you think of going to the beach for a couple of weeks?"
Anne B. Ross reading from her newest book in the New York Times best-selling Miss Julia series. This one, Miss Julia Weathers the Storm. We also met in that passage Lillian. Tell us more about her.
Yes. Lillian, someone has called her the voice of reason. And she is one of my favorite characters, and people like her very, very much. She's Julia's longtime housekeeper. And she always speaks good sense, although she also speaks in dialect. And this bothers a few people because they write to me and say, "Lillian ought to be able to speak just as well as anybody else." And I said, "Well, you're right, but she speaks like a lot of my Georgia kinfolks. And I love writing that dialect." But she's a very, very close friend of Miss Julia.
So we're going to go off on a trip to the beach. This could be a vacation. This could be finally the calmest adventure Miss Julia has. But it's not. Both the weather and some of the events that happen along the beach mean that it's going to be quite an adventure. Tell us more.
Okay, that's true. Neither Sam nor Julia have children and therefore no grandchildren, but they have younger friends with children. And so the idea is that they just gather everybody together. Sam would rent a large house on the oceanfront, and they would go down, and it would be something that the young children would remember the rest of their lives, and they would try to do it every year. And so they go. They take J.D. Pickens and Hazel Marie and their twin girls, and, of course, little Lloyd, and Letitia, who is Lillian's granddaughter, and a friend of Julia's, Lou Ann Conover, is going through a terrible problem because her husband of 30 years has just informed her he's been having an affair for 20 of those. And so they take them all and they go down there. But in meanwhile, a hurricane is coming up the coast from Florida. And so we hear about them, what they do at the beach, and how they get along together, and Luann's constant moaning because she's lost her husband and she's afraid to be by herself. And then they evacuate and get on I-26 heading west. And, of course, it's full of traffic. But they finally get back home. And then they discover that something that had happened at the beach has followed them all the way to Abbotsville.
And I don't think it's giving away too much to tell us exactly what it was that Letitia discovered while she was looking for seashells along the beach.
She discovers sand dollars and thinks that she is now wealthy. And also the others discover one morning that $100 bills are being washed ashore. Now, they don't get any of them, but everybody else on the beach is quickly running into the water and snatching up $100 bills and then leaving very quickly because they don't know who it belongs to.
That's 100 then, sand dollars per bill. But Pete, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, then when they get back to Abbotsville, some people from the beach begin to show up.
The people who may be the rightful or wrongful owners of those $100
bills.
It's great stuff. Let's take a step back and talk about this series as a series. When you did that first book that you talked about earlier, did you conceive this as a series?
No. That was the biggest surprise. Listen, I thought I had said everything I had to say in that first book. At least Miss Julia had said everything she had to say. I had no idea, didn't think about it. I just wanted that one little book published. And amazingly, it's still in print after, 19 years.
Was it that book in print? Had you aspired to be a writer all that time, or was this the one story that you felt you must tell?
No, actually, I had written a couple of little original paperbacks that were just little mysteries, and they didn't set the world on fire. This was back in the early 80s, and so I figured, well, I've tried that, and it doesn't work so well, so I'll do something else. And at that time in my life, my children were of an age that I could do what I had long wanted to do and go back to school. And so I did. I went to UNC Asheville and finished up a degree and loved it so much. I thought, well, I might as well just go on if anybody will take me. And as it turned out, every university I applied to accepted me. And I had a hard time deciding where to go. But it got down to being a choice between Duke and Chapel Hill. And I went to a favorite professor and I said, tell me the difference between the two literature departments. Which one is the strongest? Because I can't make a choice between these. And he looked at me, he said, Aunt, which basketball team do you like best? So I went to Chapel Hill.
There you go.
And got a master's degree and a PhD.
And produced this series. What is it about Miss Julia that you think that has caught on so well and has made her such a success?
I really do not know, except I think she strikes a chord with a lot of women my age. She is elderly. She's not a young, beautiful somebody. But that she's lived her life as she was told she should, being an obedient, submissive wife, taking care of her home, looking after her husband. And when she finds that he's betrayed her, that's when she literally comes of age. And she says some things. Well, people tell me. She says just exactly what I've been thinking. And so I think it's that more than anything else.
Now, Anne, I am told that she also says some of the things that the people in Hendersonville might be thinking, because I'm told that you sit around cafes and coffee shops listening for little stories and snatches of dialogue that might make their way into the book. Is that true?
No, it's not true. But I will admit that I listen and look out when I go to the grocery store. When you're looking for things, you can really, even if it's just a little something that brings a touch of realism. But, of course, I disguise them so nobody will recognize them. And I think I did a pretty good job, because after the first book was published, I'd heard that everybody in the First Presbyterian Church was mad at me because Miss Julia is a Presbyterian and she takes on her preacher. And that kind of worried me, because it was not based on any actual happening until another woman in town said, Ann says that she's writing about Presbyterians, but I know it's the Methodists she's writing about. So,
actually, you've arrived when people get mad because they don't see their name in the book.
Yeah.
Talking to Ann Ross, the author of the Miss Julia series, today on The State of Things. Your latest installment is Miss Julia Weathers the Storm. I wonder if I can ask you to read another excerpt from the book.
Sure.
Maybe you can
set
it up for us, too.
Okay, yes. They are back in Abbotsville, and Luann has learned that this woman her husband Leonard is seeing works at the county courthouse. And so she gets Julia to go with her and go in and look around and see what the woman looks like. Did you see her? Luann demanded as soon as I collapsed inside the car. What does she look like? You didn't run into Leonard, did you? Talk to me, Julia. I've been going crazy waiting for you. Luann, get us out of here. It's hot as Hades and my head is spinning. I'll tell you as soon as I catch my breath, but I'll thank you, not to mention running into anybody ever again. Well, she wouldn't let me out of the car. Parked by the curb in front of my house, she kept the car running for the air conditioning, but every time I reached for the door handle, she held me back. Tell me again, Luann pleaded. Tell me just how she looked in detail. She had on a gingham dress in a professional office? How tacky. You think she's the one he's seeing? Start at the beginning and tell me everything. Feeling the throb of a low-grade headache, I nonetheless started to retell it. Well, I rounded a corner, not looking where I was going, you know, because I was reading the plaques on the doors. Then all of a sudden, there he was. Luann, I nearly passed out, and that was before he nearly knocked me out. Oh, you've already told all that. And this for my friend with the one-track mind. Tell me about her. Are you sure you were in the right office? He had just come out of it, Luann, so I'm sure. I said, although I didn't tell her how and why I was sure, but it had been Totsy I'd been looking for, and it was Totsy with Leonard that I'd found, and I knew I'd never doubt any word coming from the Bluebird Cafe again. Well, how old is she? Luann persisted. What color are her eyes, her hair? Is she thin, fat, tall, what? And her name is Totsy? What kind of name is that? I closed my eyes trying to bring up Totsy's image in my mind, which was no problem. I could see her as plainly as I'd seen her in the flesh. The problem was this, how to describe her in terms that Luann would recognize, because the fact of the matter was that, excepting for her style, Totsy was almost a dead ringer for Luann herself. Hand Totsy over to one of the stylists in Velma's Cut and Curl, put an Ann Taylor suit on her with a nice brooch on the lapel, put her in a pair of medium heel Ferragamos, stop by the Estee Lauder counter, give her a cell phone with a prayer list to call, and you'd have the spitting image of Luann Conover. They could have been twins.
Ann B. Ross, reading from Miss Julia Weathers the Storm. Ann, what a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You can find out more about the show and about the best-selling series at our website, stateofthings.org, a program produced by Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton Norman, Laura Pelliser, and Jennifer Brooklyn. Robin Copley is our technical director, Brent Wolf, WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.